it's participatory.
Right.
And it means adding your voice to the to the readings. It means singing together, moving together towards communion, that there's something that's happening there, that you don't get to sit back and observe what's taking place.
Hi everybody, welcome back to the Groomel Guild podcast. I'm your host as always, Scotty, and today is going to be the first episode of what I hope a continuing series of episodes of group discussions here at the Guild. Last week was Liturgical Arts Week here. It was a fantastic week. We had some great classes, awesome participants. It was a small community, and it was really fun. A lot of great work was made, and I think a lot of growth had happened to a lot of people. One of the things that I love about the Guild are the discussions that happen just around the dinner table, around the coffee bar in the morning, and just generally in the studios. During this Liturgical Arts Week, every afternoon around 4:30, we would gather together as a community, and one of us would throw out a question, and we would all kind of pick at it and talk about it. And there was such a huge variety of ages and experiences in this group that the conversation that came out of that was really pretty phenomenal. So we recorded that. I cut it down a little bit. The audio quality is not great. It was just a microphone in the middle of the room. So you'll hear Tony downstairs in the kitchen making dinner. You'll hear the bell if you've missed that. If you haven't been to the Guild in a while and missed the bell calling you to dinner, well, you'll hear it today. And this conversation really ranges all over the place. It starts off a little bit about what is liturgical art, or just the term liturgical. What does it mean? How has it changed for you in the time that you've been here at the Guild, or just in general? How has it changed in your life? What has liturgical meant for you? It goes into a little bit about the church, sacred spaces. How do you set up a sacred space? What are sacred spaces for you? There's some banner talk. If you are a church leader or involved in the church, you know that banners are a hot subject right now, and oh, we get into that, and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. So I really hope you enjoy.
How to hold a bird in my hand and watch it grow. See those feathers bloom, but don't.
Okay. Yeah. So, even I think I said in my faculty presentation when I came into this week, I was not totally sure what liturgical meant for myself. The term liturgical, what that meant, how that meant in relationship with people and the work that I was doing. And I was just wondering, as we've been in this Liturgical Arts Week for a couple of days, as we've been experiencing in the studio and our community time together, has anybody's views of what is liturgical changed or shifted or clarified during this time?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I was called a liturgical sculptor. Somebody else gave me the name. Mm-hmm. That sounds very official. That's why I can't.
It sounds very official.
But what did that give you when somebody gave you the title of liturgical sculptor?
Because I created sculpture that could be used liturgically in the church.
Did that change the way that you, not necessarily change the work that you did, if you were making something specifically for the church, but did it change the way you viewed your own art?
It changed certain kinds of sculpture. Mm. There was also sculpture that I did for people, personally. Mm-hmm. And then there was other sculpture that was made for institutions. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was for institutions that became liturgical.
Do you think there's any crossover between the work that you did for people, the non-liturgical work, and the liturgical stuff?
When they gave me, when a person gave me something to do, they said what the subject was to be. Liturgically, I guess it was too.
Yeah.
But it was a subject that was community-wise. Yeah.
It seems to me that liturgical, as an adjective, is often used interchangeably with just anything that happens in church.
Yeah.
Because of my background, I don't think of it that way. because I spent a lot of years in a non-liturgical church, you know, what's sometimes referred to as low church.
Has the word spiritual taken the place of liturgical for you?
Well, I think of liturgical as referring more to a certain rhythm of worship, okay. A form and a pattern of worship, whereas I would use like ecclesiastical to refer to something that is in church. So like a form of art that's just church-oriented, I would say, you know, it's ecclesiastical or ecclesiological or something like that. But for me, liturgical art or liturgical anything has to do with a certain kind of flow of worship. You know.
Like a liturgy.
Yes. And then I also think of it in terms of the root meaning of the word, with the work of the people. So there's some kind of a participatory aspect to it. What about you, Scotty? Has it unfolded throughout the week so far?
Yeah, I think it kind of shows how poor my research is. I was not at least immediately familiar with the roots of liturgical and work of the people. And the kind of the minute that I heard that, it all kind of fell into place for me. And you know, I thought of, before coming in this, I thought of liturgical as something, as a tool to be used as, you know, in a worship setting. So I would make a chalice, and that's liturgical because it's going to be used for this, or I'm going to make, you know, a window or whatever. And I think what I'm realizing is that's very narrow. That's, you know, that's not the full breadth of what liturgy is. And it's, you know, it's coming together, being around the table, anything that facilitates that community aspect, those, you know, the people gathered together and worshiping formally, worshiping informally, or just gathering together, you know, and that's a form of worship. It's just being together in a space and, you know, sharing a common thought or a common goal or just being around each other.
But the difficulty with that is that at one time the liturgy was life, all of life, a total, a person was lived and worked for as the church community. The farmers and the builders and all of that were all part of the church community. And so everything they did was liturgical. But if they did it particularly in as when the group gathered for worship, then it had a different meaning, you know.
I think the thing that Work of the People highlights for me, and I think this is part of our current culture of worship, is that worship is not a spectator sport. It's participatory.
Right.
And it means adding your voice to the to the readings. It means singing together, moving together towards communion, that there's something that's happening there, that you don't get to sit back and observe what's taking place.
Right.
And I think that's a really hard thing in our culture, where so much of our life now is observational in nature. We've got screens, all kinds of screens, little screens, you know, medium-sized screens, big screens, huge screens. So I think that's kind of a funny, we're in a funny time and place with that.
Yeah. I think before I came to the Guild and knew any other kind of church, that was the kind of church, that's what I thought church was, you know. When our family would go, we would go and we would sit and people would talk at us, and then we'd get up and sing, and then we'd walk away. And then it was just something that you went and did, and then you left. And I didn't have very much connection to that, because there wasn't... Yeah, right, yeah. And it's only finding out that there's more to that. There's more to worship than just going to a spot, saying the thing you're supposed to say, and then standing up when you're supposed to, sitting down, and then walking out. But incorporating that and everybody participating, and that is a lot more meaningful. And I think, you know, maybe that's a part of my generation and generations around mine, that it's, we don't connect well with being lectured at, maybe, you know, or just being told you should do this because this is the way and this is the reason. And, you know, it's, I think that personally I like to be shown why, not just told why.
But I think Bob has a really good point. The liturgical arts shouldn't only be in the church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somehow it used to be more connected with life. And I think that you here in the Guild seem to, or those of us that come here and
mm-hmm.
get to spend a week, are see that more and feel that more, that liturgy and is beyond the walls of sitting inside.
Yeah.
And so the question is how to incorporate that when we go home to our own churches, our own houses, or to make, keep that sacred space going.
Mm-hmm. I love that the other day when Anne took us around and showed all the, you know, all of her personal altars that she made. That's such a lovely idea. It's not that you need an altar to worship, I don't think, but it's a reminder of that just this is a holy space as much as the church, as much as, you know, going outside and seeing the trees blow in the wind, that's a holy space as well, and that's a worshipful space. And
at one time, the Bible was chained to a pulpit,
mm-hmm.
and that was the only time it was ever read from.
Yeah.
And it was liturgical there. But when the Bible was printed in such a way that every family had one in their home, it still was, I mean, it changes the title of it. I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, there's another concept that I'm realizing that kind of overlaps with liturgy for me, which is the idea of the hours of the day or the orders, and that monastic approach of throughout every hour of every day, there's a rhythm of devotion and of centering. And so that really spills over for me into that idea of a liturgical rhythm. You know, when you're talking about Anne's altars, that, like in my mind, the power of that is she's got these reminders everywhere, so that pretty much, like, wherever she is throughout her day,
mm-hmm.
if she pays attention, she's going to see a trigger that reminds her to center and, you know, be present to the presence. So I think that can be an informative dimension of this for us as we try to bring worship into everyday life.
Is that what communion is? Isn't communion that the bread of life, the bread of the world, when our chef is down there baking that bread and comes out with a loaf, big loaf, and
right.
he slices it? Isn't that a communion?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And for me, even the fragrance, when I walk in and I smell that he's baking it, it triggers not only those very homey, warm feelings, but also the bread broken and shared. Yeah.
I thought that's what the message of communion was, that it's not only that it's bread and this is the body,
right.
but that means everybody has that body. Everybody has that bread.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all over.
I hope so.
This,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but oftentimes it doesn't get out of the church, you know.
Yeah. The bread itself.
Just the concept, you know, you go and participate in church and then it sort of stays there. rather than following out the doors with the greater vision, I think.
Which I think is so needed right now in our world.
Yeah.
That the church and worship should become just one expression of liturgical life. Mm-hmm. And that should be something that we have conversations about openly with our congregations and with the people that we're around. Because, you know, my church member who pours her life into volunteering at the cancer thrift shop is doing liturgy.
Mm-hmm.
Just as much as, you know, if she comes to the church and participates in something or whatever. I think the church has to be just one expression of what liturgy is. And for me, this week has really helped me think about that a little bit more. Because as a pastor, of course, you get pretty locked into looking at things a certain way.
Well, you make it the bread, then you mess it all up again.
Oh, yeah. I'm good at messing it up.
That's why you need communion.
People don't make communion.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't know who originally said what the root is, but you're talking about liturgy as the work of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if somebody could expand on that. I hadn't heard that as a definition before, and I wasn't sure what the roots of that.
Laura, isn't it the Latin? Liturgia?
Yeah, I think it literally is the Latin.
I can't remember if it's Greek or Latin.
Yeah.
That's what it comes from.
How did that come to be associated with such a church concept? Because it's such a... I mean, I think of work of the people, like, be anything.
Yeah.
Right? And so, in the Latin context, was it kind of the church service that this was people's work or their contribution to the church was participating in the church service, or does... I'm just curious where that came from.
I don't really know the...
Yeah, I'm not...
The origins.
I don't remember if it was in use prior and then that it just got adopted in, or if it was a word that was coined to express that the in communion, in common aspect of early worship, that it was participatory and it was about, I mean, certainly it included teaching and all of that, but it really, you know, it was about praying for each other and breaking bread together and sharing meals together and the together thing.
Well, you have to also remember this visit when they paid so much money to build those big buildings, those big cathedrals, you know, then they're going to want the bread to be in the cathedral.
Yeah.
And so it is with those great big churches that we have. It's not just cathedrals or then any churches that we have. We think in terms of that. Think of all the money that's gone into that building. Then we have to make it special.
Yeah.
We can't allow the home to have the special.
That's an issue. The building is special or the people in it are special?
I'm sorry.
I said that's kind of an issue.
Yeah.
Is it about the building or is it about the people that are coming
to right.
the building?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, as somebody who has been part of the institution, I can say that the conversation is about the importance of the people. But when you know the X number of thousands of dollars per month that has to be paid to service the building and the staff, decisions are often driven more by that than the people.
You know how the battle within the life of any congregation is the color of the carpet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think people get so attached to the church, to the building, not the actual building, wherever you're worshiping in it. And it's just, you know, it's like the color of the carpet, or, you know, how do we arrange the pews? And we can't change them because this is the way they've been for so long. And people put, I think people put so much emphasis on the history, you know, that, well, you know, my parents went to this church and, you know, I'm going to this church, my kids are going to go to this church or whatever, and that the building becomes the important thing, not the actions that are going on inside of the building.
The same thing happens with a brand new warehouse church.
Yeah.
It's not just old historical places.
Yeah.
It's a different set of drivers, because it's not so much of this is the way we've always done it, but it can still become lopsided in terms of priority.
Hmm.
Once the commitment is made and then it goes over budget and then attendance declines and the numbers don't work anymore the way they penciled out when you started the project, and now you've got stresses, and now some of your staff has to go halftime, and now you're losing more people because you don't have your staff as available.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. You have to shake.
I'm going to slant it just a little bit.
Rescue me from my cynicism.
Well, kind of. Not really, but because what you're saying is very true. But what I also want to allow for is our own direct experience of a place like this.
Yeah.
That there is a holiness that we imbue on however you want to say that, places.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the experiences that we have there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We create sacred space.
Yes.
And so inside of some of our buildings, those have a resonance that
mm-hmm.
is larger than, you know, an individual life.
Right.
Because of what's occurred in that space
mm-hmm.
and how they've felt the presence of God, or a loved one was remembered, or they were married. I mean, there's these echoes. And the
yes.
same thing happens here.
Mm-hmm.
It has to. Otherwise, we wouldn't,
right.
you know, equate this with such holy ground, which we do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to...
That's great, Lori.
Make a case for place at this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a very sacred space, and it was not built to be a church, and it isn't used primarily as a church,
mm-hmm.
but it's very much a worship space that's
right.
it's palpably... sweet,
mm-hmm.
peaceful,
well, and there, you know, there can, I think of like in the traveling that I've done and in the cathedrals or even just the churches that I've visited, and that, you know, there are some places where I walk into and I can't help but just be just quiet and just kind of, oof, this is not a place to, you know, it just quiets my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's no quantifiable way of saying, like, well, because it's so and so has had this and that and that, and I've walked into churches and worship spaces where that hasn't. I haven't felt that at all, and I don't know what that is, but I think there is like a residual soaking into the walls, like, you know, it gets kind of loosey goosey when you talk about energies and, you know,
right.
and stuff, but, you know, it's like a kitchen that's been cooked in for, you know, 20 years or whatever. Those smells just kind of soak into the walls a little bit.
But Scotty, I had the same feeling today when I was up driving around and got out of my car and looked over the valley and just the mountains
mm.
and the trees. And, you know, to me, that's sacred space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and very much that feeling where you just have to stop, take a breath, and
yeah.
take it in. And I think that can happen in many places in our lives, and certainly in our churches, and also certainly, yes, in the parlor that no one allows you to sit in with a drink. But, you know, those can be sacred spaces.
Yeah.
And I think how we each individually interpret those sacred spaces is fascinating. And it's part of each of our story.
Mm-hmm.
This is now part of my story.
Mm-hmm.
This space here. And I like that. I think that's great. It's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cut in right here. Andy Stromberg played a couple songs for us during this discussion group. And the audio quality of the recording just really didn't do those songs justice. So instead of putting out there a bad recording of some really, really beautiful songs, I'm just going to cut this part out and we'll jump right back into the discussion after the songs.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Maybe you've already talked about it, and if you have, you can just pass me on. But we're talking about liturgical arts. So what does that mean?
Probably could get a few different answers.
Could we back it up a step further? For somebody who the idea of liturgy in general is an alien concept, what is liturgy?
It's a form, like a template almost, for the rhythm of a worship service. And depending on your tradition, it can have some slightly different elements. And of course, there's a whole tradition that doesn't do liturgy, or at least what it does, it doesn't call liturgy.
Mm-hmm.
But usually, even low church has its own patterns. You know, prayer happens now, and
yeah.
Two songs happen now, and the offering happens now.
Mm-hmm.
But in a liturgical church, I don't think I can remember all of them by rote right now, but you gather, and sometimes there's, you know, processional as part of gathering, and the other elements are confession and offering and the word. Usually there are readings, scripture readings, so there's gospel and epistle and Old Testament. And there's ascending at the end. Sometimes that gets left out, but I think it's a very important piece of worship.
When I was in seminary, at a disciples seminary, our worship professor listed the liturgy, at least for our denomination, in four stages, and they all start with G. Gather, get, gobble, and go. And so we gather as a people, we get the word or the reading of the sermon or whatever, and we gobble, that's communion, and then we go. And so liturgy is kind of that flow through worship.
You remember that.
Yeah, it's easy. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have a form.
Yeah.
And then add liturgical arts.
Right.
And you have authority. You didn't mention authority. Who has the authority in that situation? The congregation or the pastor?
In which situation?
Well, you said a liturgical church. What was a liturgy?
Hmm.
What is who has the authority in a liturgical church?
Could be anybody, or it could be God.
Yeah, I guess it varies from tradition, right? Or, you know,
okay.
Doesn't it? Because some, in some cases, that's going to be Episcopal, where you've got pretty much one person at the top, and others will be more Presbyterian, where you've got a group of elders that are theoretically in charge, and then you've got congregational, where in theory, the congregation is.
Theory. But I still think the pastor is in charge. Every single one of those divisions of government, the one that has the last word is the minister.
The efficient,
for some reason. I'm just responding to that question.
I feel like there's some churches that really do emphasize the communal aspect and have more of like a shared leadership, or have a, you know, even an understanding where if there's, you know, kind of the core group of leaders or whatever, that those decisions don't get made by an individual, but it's a collective, it kind of has to be agreed on by everybody. But I think you're right. Most of the time, most church concepts, it comes down to somebody that has the final say or something.
Well, it's kind of default too. I mean, they.
Well, I think there's a difference between governance and worship.
Exactly.
So, in the context of worship, there is a person, and that person might change from week to week, but that shepherds it through, right?
But the congregation can fire the minister.
Right, but we're not
according to his constitution.
Right, we're not really talking about governance. We really are talking about the act of worship, is the primary bit of liturgical arts.
Right. Yeah, so the question about what is liturgical arts or what are liturgical arts? Yeah, go ahead and take a crack at that.
Yeah, please.
Well, I think there's so many ways to think about liturgical arts. So at the very minimum, it's like, are the words themselves artfully crafted and created? In other words, is there meaning? Is there metaphor? Are there larger concerns that are brought forward? Do the words themselves have meaning for the people in this time and place? That's an art, to craft those words. Is the music artful? Does it meet the needs of the day, specifically the text that's being lifted up or whatever other concerns? Is it not just random, we haven't sung this one for a while, so let's throw this hymn in? Or everybody likes this one, so let's do it today. Whether or not it has any connection to the overall shape of the worship service. And then there's the very material world that, we're working in a bit more, with at least the weaving and the ceramics, is like, what do the objects look like that are part of the service itself? Is the cloth that's on the communion table, was that purchased through a commercial company that has no connection to the people themselves, or did somebody weave that or do something with it that means it comes out of the community itself? And then don't get me started on banners. because so how are anything that's hung in a church, is it large enough for a community to see it? In other words, you cannot put art that you would have in your home on the wall of an enormous church building. Sanctuary space. It does not read, it does not work, but and are the images that are contained in those art pieces big enough to draw people's spirit out and into some new place? Banners that say Christ is King, I'm sorry, that just doesn't cut it anymore. And you cannot put a cross and a crown on something and expect it to read. It doesn't communicate. And so, to me, those are all aspects of liturgical art.
Well, you're talking about curating. So you're talking about the art and curating.
Exactly.
The art, which is definitely a dimension for the people that are working to make the services.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the architecture itself.
Right.
Exactly.
Even if it doesn't feel very artistic, it is part of the art that you're dealing with, and you can then bring more intention to it if you're just in a box in a business park or something.
So you're talking about an integrated worship service,
mm-hmm.
where you're bringing in everything that seems appropriate for that time and space, flowers, that's going to work to enhance that week's message.
Right.
Yeah, I think of liturgical arts as all of the things, both physical and structure and song, that facilitate, that help, that that push worship to connect with the people.
Yeah.
And that definition is so broad that it's kind of like, well, what does that mean? But it's the outdoor space that you're gathered in, or when you walk into a building and the lights coming in through the windows, and let alone if you know, maybe you inherited the space from another denomination, whatever, and the windows are not, they are what they are, but then as the light cascades down, somebody has made some crumpled cloth on a table that the light catches, you know, and it all just facilitates a sense of space and holiness and worshipfulness.
Yeah.
I think so many things can be,
yeah,
can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's intentional.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a good word for at least how I approach worship,
mm-hmm,
that it's the intention behind the thing, it matters.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought that's gone into it and the connections, because I think artistically art is about making connections between ideas and things, you know, I mean, the connections matter. And as the role of the pastor or the worship facilitator, whatever that role is, they've got a lot of responsibility, in my mind at any rate, to facilitate those connections for the community. And on any given Sunday, any one individual, it may just completely, you know, not be the thing that they need to hear, see, or do. But you, you know, you funnel things in a way and you hope you catch, you know.
Yeah. I think the bulletin cover.
Yeah.
We have a really wonderful integrated worship service. It's from A to Z. It's really lovely.
Yeah.
And that's a good point, you know, because in many cases, if you do have a bulletin, the bulletin cover is kind of willy-nilly. I mean, at least it has looked that way to me in places where it doesn't so much connect. It's just like, you know, some clip art or a stock photo or whatever. But, I totally affirm that bringing that into the whole consideration of what's happening, and you know, realizing that the bulletin really is part,
yeah,
of the experience,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring some intentionality to that.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. That's what you're holding in your hand. So much of the service, and maybe just coming from my pottery background, like those are the connections, those are the chances where you can really connect with your audience or the viewer or the person that's experiencing your work, is when it's being held and there's that physical connection. You know, it's different than the windows or the altar or the, you know, the paintings,
yeah,
on the wall. And just that little bit of physical connection can make such a huge difference.
Well, it's an opportunity to bring another piece of the service in if,
yeah,
there's,
mm-hmm,
you know, a candle holder or, you know, something that can,
mm-hmm,
pull it all together too a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
A word.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like in Broadway, when we're talking about liturgical arts, we're talking about arts that can be done as a part of a worship service, but then also art that is worshipful outside of a specific church worship context. Do you see that that's fair?
Say that again.
Well,
I
think
it's sure I understand.
Well, I was trying to kind of give a more concise definition or answer to when you're saying what are liturgical arts, and it seemed like there was both those veins coming up. On the one hand, it is a, you know, a banner that's hung for a worship service or a bulletin that's printed. But I think maybe it was you that was saying earlier, it's also the work that you're doing that's outside of a church worship context, but that maybe is done in a worshipful way or done in a way that you're bringing meaning to it or, you know.
Like the outside altars?
Yeah,
yeah,
Scott was talking about,
mm-hmm,
Anne's altars,
Scott,
and,
yeah,
and that could, I mean, it could be a form of liturgical arts.
Right.
Yeah.
I would say altar setting.
Yeah.
You know, I would consider that liturgical arts, but I think that it's like the question of, well, what is art? You know, well,
right,
that's just,
yeah,
there's a, every person has a different answer in that. I, not having any academic history with the church or, you know, any study, you know, for me, I think it's really individual. What is liturgical art? You know, it's what is liturgical for you? What is liturgical art for you? which doesn't really help when you don't know the liturgical.
Well,
you know.
It seems like, you know, we're talking about bringing an integrated art or art into the worship setting in an intentional fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good working definition. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it enhances. It's not because we're just bringing art in.
Right.
It's because we're bringing it in with a specific intention.
Mm-hmm.
I would add to it that it needs punctuation now and then with some special kind of service.
Excuse me.
Because you want people to remember. If it becomes too routine, they won't remember anything. But you have to have something that attracts attention, whether it's some piece of liturgy, whether it's a song, whether it's a dance, whether it's a piece of art, or whether whatever it is. You want people to remember that they were there.
Well, teach me, baby. Oh, Lord, yes.
And thanks for listening. I hope you really enjoyed that conversation. I had a great time participating in it, leading it a little bit, and then going back over and listening to these conversations. There's such a lot of wealth of good information and ideas in there that I really think that's very worthwhile, and I really hope to continue doing these. Probably not every discussion we have here at the Guild, because otherwise you would just be a sea of discussions. But every now and then I'll record one and release them, because I think they're pretty fun. Upcoming events here at the Guild. Don't forget, May 14th is the start of our Guild Songwriting Workshop with Jan Chris teaching. This is such a good workshop. If you are at all interested in writing songs, playing an instrument, just getting involved in that aspect of creativity, please sign up. We do have some room. It's really fun. It is one of my favorite times here at the Guild. The music, guitars, vocals just echo all throughout campus, and it's just a really phenomenal time. So go to our website, sign up, May 14th to the 17th. It's the Guild Songwriting Workshop, led by Jan Chris. It's going to be a great time. Also, a reminder, on May 30th, we have the Legacy Luncheon. This is a free event. We just RSVP on the website. It's a time to come up, remember Sandy Richardson, a guild master who passed away recently. And also, we are going to be dedicating our new guild sculpture garden. So, if you remember, over by the labyrinth, we used to have an old cold frame. Before that, it was an old tent that people stayed in. Well, you know, it's seen better days, and in fact, it's been taken down totally. And we have a new hoop house that we talked about last week, or the week before, out by the garden. And so now we have this kind of blank space over by the labyrinth. And we were kind of debating what we were going to do about it. And we decided that we're going to make it a sculpture garden. So hopefully by then, we're going to have one of Sandy's pieces installed. We're going to have some other artwork, some benches to sit on, and a nice, quiet, meditative space right by the labyrinth, which I think is really fitting. So if you're able to come up, May 30th, starts at 1 o'clock, RSVP on the website. It's a totally free event, and we really hope to see you there. If you like our podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes and Podomatic. It helps us out a ton. Every time you rate our podcast, every time you subscribe, it boosts us up in the iTunes library and more people can find us. Also, please share us on Facebook. That would be really good. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to create a Guild Podcast Facebook page where we can have some discussion, talk back and forth. It'd be really great to hear from you. Until then, if you have any questions, comments, ideas for upcoming podcasts, things you might want to listen to, go ahead and contact me. It's scott@grunewaldguild.com. That's S-C-O-T-T at G-R-U-N-E-W-A-L-D. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great day.